Welcome to An Alaskan Moment. A moment is a measure of time, 90 seconds. An Alaskan moment lasts a little longer, sometimes twice as much. This week in Alaska history, February 28th, 1967. Climbers completed the first winter ascent of Mount McKinley, now known as Denali. March 1st, 1879. The HMS Osprey arrived at Sitka from Victoria, British Columbia, in response to a call for help, inspired by fear of an Indian uprising. The ship remained at Sitka until the arrival of the USS Alaska on April the 3rd. March 2nd, 1903, Congress appropriated $485,000 for a submarine telegraph cable from Seattle to Sitka and Juneau. March 3rd, 1913, the first Alaska Territorial Legislature convened in the Elks Lodge building at Juneau. 23 members met that day. One elected member from the Fairbanks District failed to appear during the session. March 4, 1915, President Woodrow Wilson signed the Alaska School Lands Bill, turning over to the territory Sections 16 and 36 of all surveyed townships. March 5, 1959, the Detroit 59ers, more than 50 families from Michigan, motored out of Detroit towards Alaska with the intent to homestead on the Kenai Peninsula. March 6, 1973, voters went to the polls to choose between Emil Noddy and Don Young to replace United States Representative Nick Begich, who had been killed in a plane accident. This Week in Alaska History, compiled by Robert N. DeArmond of Sitka, courtesy of the Alaska Historical Society. An Alaskan Moment is produced at Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting in Sandpoint, apradio.org. Music by Paul Holmberg, with help from the Aleutians East Borough and the City of Sandpoint, and especially you, the supporters of public radio. Now for your poem. Today's poem is found on the phonograph Centennial Collection of Alaska Poetry, produced by the Anchorage Centennial Commission, 1967. Saga of the Islander by Carol Beery Davis.
From the deer parks on Admiralty, curious fawns creep down to the inlet in soft, misty dawns to view that stark spectacle, silent, alone. See, there at her feet, the flood tides disown tangled tresses of seaweed. The raven's black wings keep fluttering over her ribs, beggar rings. For that rusty red hull on the beach at Green's Bay was the wealth-laden Islander, speeding away with Klondikers bringing out pokes of gold dust in riotous joy and satisfied lust. For Vancouver, Victoria, both could assay these riches for which they were destined to pay. For how could this holiday steamer surmise that she was a vessel of death in disguise? On August the 15th, year 1901, when the watch between midnight and dawn had begun, on a clear Thursday night with no fog, the log said, she struck on an iceberg while full speed ahead. Although pilot LeBlanc tried to turn the ship out, the helm had no answer to Captain Foote's shout. The shock was terrific. Room doors were jammed fast, and the passengers broke through their windows at last. The pressure of air compressed in the hold by inrushing waters was a great force, unrolled like a dynamite charge, which lifted the deck before sleepers could realize fully her wreck. With a wound in her port side, her sad doom had come. And those brief 15 minutes were seconds to some. The bow began sinking. The waves crept abreast of the smoking room. People rushed out, scarcely dressed, to the upper deck, hoping to catch the life rafts, since the boats had all gone, and there were no sea crafts. With just the stern left, frantic men slid down ropes from the davit to rafts, standing by to no hopes. For the gasping stern sucked them straight down, and but two arose to the surface again, and a few hailed the others, "Oh, come, let's try righting the raft!" And those adrift pleaded, crying, "Help, help!" white and daft. Captain Foote walked the bridge till its death rattle passed. Then, though rescued, he grieved much, and drowned himself at last. The purser had opened the safe as they sank and returned to the men pokes of dust for the bank, One man had a satchel with thousands in gold. He carried it everywhere, keeping tight hold. The end near, they warned it should go overboard. In the final cold plunge, he died with his hoard. A Chinaman, thinking he'd walk on the wave with feet tied in life belts, met a watery grave. A couple were parted from dawn until noon, but their meeting was saddened by knowledge too soon that their child was still missing. At sunset that day, kind friends brought their babe they had snatched from the spray. 138 struggled to shore and tramped the wet beach 12 miles to a store. For the bodies of 40, they combed through the kelp, and the half-masted Lucy and Flossie lent help. A woman's dead body, face downward, was found, her hands grasping rocks, just a foot from firm ground. Then, for 33 years, the ship lay in the sea, her fortune and locale a deep mystery. Gay codfish and shrimp played through her open portholes, where debris held dread danger in twisted iron poles, and fireworks of phosphorus images weird illumined the dark depths, where gruesome things leered. Captain Finch started search, but success was not won, for carbon monoxide gas poisoned his son. Then the Wiley boys dived down with much less alarm, for they used a bell cage with mechanical arm. But men, ever greedy for gold they might reach, after several trials, then raised her to beach. With 20 strong cables, with diving bell, barge, they lifted her stern, but her bow broke at large. In a sling between ships, the high tides brought her in, 10 feet at a time, taking months to sew in. Her railing of teakwood brought up to the air had dust of gold particles embedded there. In a lady's hose salvaged from ocean floor sand was her tibia, also bills, rolled in a band. A stowaway's bones, which they found in the coal, was a youth the men had hid ere the sea took its toll. From the islanders' barnacles came reading lamps. Her marble and linen were stolen by tramps, and only the bones of her framework remain, ablaze in the sun, or dim shrouded in rain. Her skeleton nests only seagulls and moss, where tiny shrubs start from the seeds that winds toss. Do wandering icebergs taunt her as they pass? Your grave should be water. For shame, it is grass. And sometimes I wonder, at dark of the moon, does she hear the human cries, or just maybe the loon? At the change of the watch, does she hear the ship's bell, or is it the buoy tinkling there on the swell? What a strange souvenir the surf sought to enridge. No passenger ever allowed on this bridge. The islander flings us this thought for today. You can't take it with you, so give it away.